RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
So, to the implications of a government department deciding which information is acceptable for the public. And this relates to New Zealand Post accused of censorship for refusing to deliver 80,000 anti-Wellington Council pamphlets. Reporting from an RNZ story here. An Islamic group says a statement on the pamphlet reinforces anti-Islamic sentiment and risks provoking others into action. The Postal Workers Union says it was seeking clarification, and this is going back last week, from the Human Rights Commission over the legality of a leaflet described as malicious misinformation by Islamic groups. So what's all that about? And also the question of academic freedom. Joining us here at RCR to talk about both, Nick Han, who is Education Partnerships Manager at the Free Speech Union. He's an experienced high school teacher, passionate advocate of civil liberties, and Nick develops and presents the FSU's Speak Up program in schools. And he joins us now. Hi, Nick. Thanks for coming on RCR.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be with you.
To the pamphlet story first. So, as you understand it, this is a pamphlet that says what? What's the pamphlet about?
Well, it's from a group called Better Wellington, a concerned group of ratepayers in the Wellington region who obviously take exception to the way that council are spending. And so they've put a pamphlet together. In the pamphlet, they detail all the different things where they believe the council have gone awry, where they've been overspending, this type of stuff. Now, I'm not from Wellington. I'm not a ratepayer there. But the real sticking point, apparently, for the posties was that someone read one line on the back of the pamphlet, which talked about how the council was preoccupied with, among other things, the call to prayer from six mosques in the Wellington area that might happen in the future, perhaps as a memorial to the Christchurch shootings. Right. But it doesn't say because it's a pretty limited statement. It's just a very brief, short statement.
Now, this was something that was talked about a while ago. I remember this. I'm from Wellington, and I was in Wellington at the time. And we're going back months and months and months when that came up first time. And my understanding, it could be wrong, was that was call to prayer where appropriate at a particular time of the day, which was, I think, quite early in the morning. That's my recollection. Does that ring a bell for you? Historically?
Yeah, again, I'm not from Wellington, but I did follow the issue generally at the time. I mean, really, I think the problem here is that people are saying it's misinformation. Well, in what sense? Is it because six mosques are named or mentioned in this line in a pamphlet? Is it not six mosques? Is it one mosque? I don't really know. I think the point is maybe there's some details that could be corrected in the pamphlet, but the general issue is that they're pointing out this is one of the things the council are preoccupied with. So it's not actually an attack on Islam. They could just as easily be talking about church bells. You know, the issue seems to be that people are saying, well, this is dog whistling. But when you read the pamphlet, which a lot of people hadn't done, but they had very strong opinions about it somehow, you go, well, actually, in the context of the pamphlet, it's just one of a list of things that Better Wellington people and, you know, who are part of this ratepayers group, they're concerned about being a distraction from the core activities of a typical council.
I'm reading a quote that RNZ carried by Abdur Razak of the Federation of Islamic Associations of New Zealand. And he said, it's not, referring to the pamphlet, it's not just misinformation, it's malicious information. Coming out and telling this kind of a lie and trying to incite hatred against a community, it's wrong. Plain and simple. This word hatred, Nick, is bandied around all the time. Hate is a very severe word, right? It's right at the end of the line in terms of the meaning of the word. It means the worst possible thing. When you hear a quote like that, what does that do to that word hate or hatred, just using it so loosely, do you think?
Well, look, everyone, I think, can agree that hatred's a real thing. The problem is that in what sort of context, what situation is it a problem? Because you see, I could say, well, I hate everything that the Nazis stood for, which I do. I hate everything the Nazis stood for. But does that make me a bigot? Now, people say, well, come on, you know, we're not talking about Nazis here. But even in the example of this pamphlet, I mean, what's your definition? What's your threshold for something, first of all, to be hatred, and then for, if it is hatred, for it to then be something so problematic, so dangerous that it has to be suppressed as a piece of information? I think we've really lost the plot if we are reading into these you know, very short sort of sentences, in this case, just one sentence in a long pamphlet, that the kind of accusations that people are making here, I just think it's bonkers.
Because you could argue the dog whistle is in fact the use of the word hate or hatred. That's the dog whistle.
Well, that's right. Yeah. So we use this rule. We have to be ready for it to be used back on us, right? And that's the problem, is hatred can be a concept that is defined, you know, subjectively. It's in the eye of the beholder to some degree. There are a lot of things we might widely agree are very hateful, but we've seen just such a liberal use of that word, right? It's used willy-nilly now to describe simple things that I think 10, 15 years ago, most people wouldn't have even kind of batted an eye over. I think we've seen a real erosion of the value and the objective sort of purpose of language here.
And then I see that the Wellington Mayor, Tori Whanau, has come in. She says it's pretty disappointing and gross to purposefully put out incorrect information. So do we know what was incorrect about the line in that pamphlet? Do we know if anything, has anyone actually said what the incorrect bit is?
Yeah, again, you would think that would be the first thing that would need to happen, right? If people had a problem with that line in the pamphlet, then they could just say, well, look, this is specifically what is happening in relation to the issue as it is before council. Now, no one's really done that. I've not seen anything, and I've been looking pretty closely at all of the stuff coming out in the media this past week. You know, rather, they would choose to make this a wider cultural issue. You know, and I think they're trying to exploit, when I say they, I mean, it could be anybody on the political spectrum. You know, we don't have a dog in this fight in terms of political partisanship here. We're simply trying to point out, be consistent, you know, and if you have an issue, then specifically point out what the inaccuracy would be here. They haven't done that to my knowledge. And I think partly that's because maybe some of the things that Better Wellington are trying to point out have to do with a lack of transparency, a lack of kind of successful communication with the ratepayers of Wellington. Now, I'm not a member of Better Wellington. I didn't know about them until last week.
Yep.
But what's happened here is really it's backfired, because if you really wanted to suppress this kind of information, well, what you've ended up with is the amplification of it, right? So now people all around the country and many, many people around Wellington who would have probably just completely ignored the pamphlet if it had turned up in their letterbox last week, they are now going, well, what is this about? You know, people don't like being told that you're not mature enough to read a pamphlet that's, you know, someone wants to put in your letterbox. And so people take exception to that. They, you know, they don't want to be treated in this way and infantilized.
Speaking of that, just finishing off what Tori Whanau said, because I think that speaks to what you just said. People are hurting. Okay, they will be hurting commemorating that terrible event in Christchurch. They will be hurting. So yeah, I get that. And may feel vulnerable. Here's the, I got to protect you, right? I got to protect you. You might be feeling vulnerable. And they're more susceptible to this misinformation. Here's that word again. And she's concerned about that. Meanwhile, the pipes are leaking. They've just spent $180 million on a convention center that no one's hiring. Rates are going up, yada, yada, yada. It's this leveraging hurt, vulnerability, like we're all infants, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, if this was a conservative politician or someone on the left, it doesn't really matter, because what I think is happening quite obviously here, if people know to look for it, is this is a case of misdirection. I mean, this is like the magician's, you know, greatest trick. You point over here while you do something else over here. The real issue that obviously Better Wellington are trying to point out is all through their pamphlet. And someone has gone and taken one line and really, I think, out of context, tried to beat this up into an issue that it just isn't. The people of Better Wellington, from what I've learned so far, aren't even particularly interested in any kind of religious activity. They're not talking about religion per se. They're talking about the preoccupation of the council, you know, with this
with non-core activities that they're paying rates to fund, right?
Exactly, yeah. So I think, you know, politicians, whatever their stripes, they will use these kinds of issues around sensitivity, around hate, whatever that actually means in a particular situation, who's to say, but they'll take those issues and they'll use them to try and distract people from what's really being, you know, debated or needs to be debated. And again, look, we're not backing Better Wellington as a group. They're not. We don't have any kind of stance on these issues as an organization. We're just trying to point out that this is, you know, a real, you know, modern day attempt to censor, to suppress speech.
Yeah, because you're allowed to say, you're allowed to raise issues. Okay, into the censoring part, postal workers thinking they have some authority somewhere, moral authority, I guess they thought, working in the taxpayer's service to reliably deliver communication, which is their only reason for existing, making some kind of decision to edit things out of the delivery process. So there's now that part of it. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, we're seeing this problem in other areas of communication. So obviously the posties have a long history of doing this job. Telecommunications, though, we've seen the same type of temptation towards censorship, towards controlling, you know, customers, who gets into the, you know, who's a subscriber or customer, say, for Spark or Vodafone. We had that issue last year when Chenille Lal, the you know, sort of LGBTQ activist, was out there, and he was saying, well, look, we shouldn't have people spreading, in his words, hate, you know, towards transgender people. And so Spark and Vodafone, what are you guys going to do about it? And very quickly, probably too quickly for the comfort of the you know, the upper management on those companies, the social media people working for Spark and Vodafone said, yeah, sure, and they jumped on the bandwagon. And so we had to kind of, you know, point out, hey, hold on a second. You guys have, like you said before, one role, and that is to ensure that communication can happen without being impeded. If there's a clear violation of the law, then tell the police, get them involved. You know, there are criminal prosecutions that could follow if there is a case to be made. But if it isn't, you know, a clear-cut criminal, you know, violation, then what are we doing here? We're telling people that we know better than them. No one's appointed us to that role. No one's appointed the posties to this role of censor. They've asked these posties to do their contractually obligated job, right? You know, which is to deliver the mail. So we're going to see this more often with, you know, the medium of communication. We're going to see it happening with telecoms. We're going to see it happen with internet providers. We're going to see it, you know, like with the posties.
And then they run to Mummy, the Human Rights Commission, as if they can kind of do something. And I think the Human Rights Commission has pointed out they don't police the law. They don't have anything to do with that. They are just there to try and get relations as harmonious as possible. So, you know, it's like, Mummy, Mummy, help, you know.
Yeah. And I think that what probably needs to happen here is that the Postal Workers Union, and who, you know, those who are really calling the shots, because I'd be careful about assuming that all the posties think this way. I'm pretty sure that only some of them probably have even got a strong opinion on it.
Yeah, so who's talking for who, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, John Maynard, you know, their president, I can't remember his exact title, but I mean, he's out there last week, you know, making these really big, bold statements about how this is dangerous and this is threatening social harmony and these other sort of lovely ideas. We want those things. We want social harmony. We want, you know, as much cohesion in terms of our civil society as we can, but not at the expense of civil liberties, not at the expense of a basic right to ensure that you're receiving information in your mailbox that you're legally entitled to receive.
You know, yeah, I wonder if they feel uncomfortable about delivering adult toys that have been mail ordered. Right?
I mean, well, that's right. There are so many things. You know, where does it stop? I mean, we have traditionally defined certain things as contraband, as you know, as illegal. The New Zealand Post, you know, systems are designed to screen for those types of dangerous things if it's, you know, content of some kind or objects of some kind or whatever. But we're dealing now with people saying, you can't read a line in a pamphlet which is actually talking about government, local government accountability. So we've lost the plot here somewhere.
Yeah, where do you think that happened? Just before we get on to academic freedom, where do you think this losing of the plot moment happened? Because we're seeing it more and more now, you know.
I'd say there's been a steady philosophical kind of trend and it's entered pop culture. And entering pop culture, it's been amplified by the internet, by social media. But we are seeing a pretty serious kind of split in terms of, I guess, a worldview. You know, we used to have not an identical worldview in New Zealand where everyone thought the same thing, but we agreed on certain principles, especially around our governance, around, you know, our democracy and the essential sort of rights that come with democracy, that make democracy possible. I think probably the last 10 years we've seen this accelerate, you know, really seriously accelerate. But I you know, in talking about academic freedom, I was doing a master's degree in the early 2010s, and I remember then my first real experience, sort of live experience of seeing a mob form, a mob of students, a bit like what we saw at Albert Park with Posey Parker. But I saw a mob of students there forming around an issue at the time that was kind of considered controversial. Not even controversial, but they thought it was you know, something that they couldn't tolerate on campus. And so they tried to drive out a smaller group of students from campus, you know, using the apparatus of tertiary students union. And I remember that moment thinking, wow, this is new territory. I don't think that I saw this coming. But it's quite frightening now. And really, since that time, as I've been observing, I think we've just seen a real escalation. And it's far more pervasive now.
Yeah, so that's over a decade or a decade-ish ago you're talking about, right? Yeah, so we've come quite a way now. So how much of a risk is, because most people aren't academics, they're out, you know, earning their keep every day and doing what they have to do, put food on the table, all those things. Yet this is going on, you know, in the academic institutions. What eventual effect does it have on the average person? Does it swing around and affect more than just that area, but everyone?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I think, unfortunately, you know, people will be fooling themselves if they think it isn't going to come to their front doorstep, because it will. We're seeing, you know, through free speech unions' work, we're seeing all kinds of professions, industries, and then, you know, social settings. We're seeing issues, you know, at a very low level in terms of local politics. But, you know, the problem, I guess, is that people feel quite powerless, and so they're shutting down when they feel like this could be a threat to them and their livelihood. And so that chilling effect, you know, it doesn't get the headlines, but it's happening, and it's probably one of the biggest challenges we face.
Yeah, because policies are made by people who come from that background, don't they, that affect everyday lives. They affect the way public service operates, for example. And I think it's fair to say that it has, right? It really has. Big effect.
Well, that's right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, accountability is not going to happen in a political sense. We're not going to have accountability at the local level or the national level. And even in workplaces, you know, there are things that people should be able to just say in the ordinary course of going about their day that that shouldn't be an issue. I mean, if people disagree, they disagree. But why that suddenly has to become relevant to their employability, you know? Why is that view that they have on some social topic really necessary for them? You know, how does it affect them in terms of how they do their job? It shouldn't, you know? And we knew this in the past. We seem to have forgotten it.
Do you think there is an association with left and woke, or is woke something completely separate? Because I used to be more of a lefty than a conservative. And as I've got older and seen what's happening, I've become more conservative. But that's usually a drift that takes place over age anyway. Though we retain elements of, you know, our younger positions, let's say. Is woke something different from left, or do the two go together, do you think?
I think there's been a really interesting transformation within the left, and you know, the traditional trade union, you know, cradle to grave type of social safety net that we thought might be you know, vital for New Zealand. Those sorts of views have really been supplanted or hijacked, I would suggest, by the progressive ideology that seems to be coming through in force now. And that's been a long, long philosophical trend. You know, we're talking a, really a century now since major intellectuals, you know, particularly the Frankfurt School, people like Antonio Gramsci, these Marxist or neo-Marxist thinkers who really said, well, rather than taking, you know, power through a violent revolution, we're going to have to do it by attempting social, cultural change, the long march through the institutions, you know, where we begin to change hearts and minds. And that often begins with academics, but it filters down into popular culture through media, you know, through journalism, and then, of course, it gets into the politics. So I think we're seeing that. And I you know, fully understand what you mean. I mean, I come from originally from a family of socialists, you know. My grandfather was a communist in the British Communist Party. He was a member of the party in Britain before World War II. He began to change his views, though, because he saw what the reality on the ground was in Eastern Europe, you know, with the Iron Curtain falling and so on. So, you know, over time, yeah, people wise up. Now, again, that's you know, my political background, but the stuff we're trying to do, we're trying to point out, shouldn't matter which, you know, political party you identify with. Do you agree, though, with some core democratic principles? Free speech has got to be one of those things. Otherwise, you just don't have a democracy. You have the facade of a democracy, but you ultimately have, you know, this managerialism, these technocrats who are running things behind the scenes and giving it sort of the democratic gloss. But it isn't real if that happens.
Seems to be a lot of emotion involved in all of this as well, way more than I can ever remember. And it makes me wonder, are people who are fueled in this way, are they driven by genuine beliefs, or are they caught up in some emotional vortex that's been generated that pulled them in? And are they siding with issues or having particular views on things, not because they have an understanding of the other person, but because it makes them personally feel better and more worthy? I wonder.
Yeah, I think there's a heroic element to it. People want to think that they're playing a heroic role. And, you know, I don't want to be patronizing and say that people can't make a difference. Of course they can.
Yeah.
But the question is, are you making a difference in the sense that you see other people as your equals and you want to help, but you don't want to patronize them? You don't want to look down on them and infantilize them and say, well, look, you know, I care so much about you that I'm going to make these decisions for you, and I'm going to tell you what you can hear and what you can read and what you can see and what you're allowed to say because it's for your own good. And yeah, so I think this constantly creeps into the discourse, and a lot of people think they're doing other people a big favor by trying to censor and operate and think on their behalf. We've got to move away from that. And, you know, I think there are lots of ways in which this comes about. But once we know that it's happening and once we can see it and call it out, let's call it out, you know, while we still can, basically, while we still have that ability to speak up.
The funny thing is, those of us who believe in free speech, we tolerate what these people say because that's free speech. We don't like it, but, you know, we'll defend to the death your right to say it. Yet if it was flipped and we were the ones stopping people from saying things, how long would that be tolerated?
Well, exactly. And so it's got to go both ways. I mean, we've always got to be reminding ourselves, we've got to keep ourselves humble in this kind of campaign to restore this culture of free speech, because we really have lost it to some degree. And we do have to keep kind of, you know, looking at ourselves in the mirror and saying, are we being consistent here? Because, look, a lot of the people we're up against, you know, I don't see them as enemies. They're my neighbors. They could be people, you know, I see at the shops every day. They think that they're doing the right thing here. They are often well-intentioned. Some are not. Some are doing this cynically. Some are manipulating, you know, the latest cause for their own advancement. But I think that a lot of people mean well, But we, as we know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And we've got to come back to history. You know, history affords us so many lessons. I mean, I was just running a session with some high schoolers today. And one of the sort of stunning things, and it always kind of, you know, really gives me a wake up when I go back and look at what happened in the past when we lost sight of these principles. We thought that censorship was justified in this case and that case. And before you know it, we've got people saying, we know what's best for you. Yes, you're equal, but some are more equal than others.
Yeah, we know that one. Well, you're in quite a unique position in that case. And I wonder how you don't have to give away too much, you know, the room that you have to maneuver with the walls kind of closing in a little in the academic world. Are you finding in, you know, your role as a high school teacher, and you just mentioned, you know, on the job there, that this is starting to be difficult for you to navigate?
Yeah, well, I mean, I resigned from teaching last year and
did something else
for a time, but I'm still a registered teacher, and I've had some attempts, or there's been an activist in particular who try to you know, report me and get my registration taken off me because I.
Well, that's the other thing. They're nasty. They want to kind of destroy you. I mean, hello.
Yeah, it is nasty, but again. I just try not to focus on the personalities. I really, even in my own situation, like I mentioned, I just saw it as this is a way of thinking that's contagious. People find it very difficult to really reason through it, and maybe they don't reason, you know, thoroughly enough in the first place, and they allow this emotive appeal to kind of take the place of rational thinking. And so, motivated by these, you know, good intentions, but without the clarity that you can get from rational thought, they're just, you know, plowing ahead. And so there are a lot of casualties, you know, that come from this if we're not careful. I don't want to be one of those people that is going out after personalities and, you know, doing these character assassinations. I think that's part of the reason why we're in the sorry state we are now. We've identified issues too much with personalities. We need to be able to kind of remind everyone, hey, hold on, let's debate the principles, the points, the evidence, the facts. And if we can keep personalities out of it, of course, sometimes that's going to be difficult. But that's the only way we're going to be able to show young people that this is a sustainable and constructive way to flourish as a liberal democracy. And that's what I try to get across today in, you know, in the session we were running with these high school students.
Yeah. I've seen a lot recently from FSU coming out, so you've had a lot to say. I wonder if you are able to gauge the effect you're having.
Well, you know, just this afternoon we were meeting with a supporter, you know, down here in the Waikato, and we happened to be coming through. We thought, you know, this is one of the things that we're always trying to do as an organisation. We're trying to make sure we've got our ear to the ground. We're listening to feedback, not just from supporters, but from those who are probably on the fence or a little bit cynical, but critical of what about our approach, because we want to improve. We want this to be a success. We want people, as many people as possible, to see the sense, to see the you know, to see the wisdom that our forefathers, you know, our ancestors, in developing the liberal democracy we live in, had to find out the hard way for themselves. And so let's not squander that. Let's not waste it because we haven't considered, you know, how good it can be.
To finish where we started, you'll be pleased to know, I'm sure you know, that New Zealand Post has come out and said it's not appropriate for the service to act as a censor, and the flyers would go out. So at least where it counts, where the buck stopped, we know that they still know their mission, right?
Yeah, I think from what I've read now, it seems that they've reached that sort of resolution only because they threatened individual legal action against some of those who were resisting within the postal service. So, you know, it's a bit sad. It has to kind of be resolved that way. It would be better if people could just see sense and then talk it out. That's what we're aiming for all the time.
Nick Han from the Free Speech Union, Education Partnerships Manager with FSU. Thanks for coming on. Really interesting chat, Nick. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. visit realitycheck.radio/email.